This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Who we got next?
Misha Ketchell.
Misha.
Misha, who is normally, of course, in the studio with us, the editor of The Conversation, who is by phone today. Misha, thank you so much for being available to chat with us, because there's been so much this week to talk about.
Right. I'm sorry I couldn't come in.
That's all right. Now, what's going on in the background? Sounds like you're screwing up cellophane.
No, can you hear me better now?
Or yes, that's better. That's better. So what a week. Christopher Pyne is leaving the Parliament to retire on a $220,000 indexed annual pension. One of many ministers leaving the ship. Misha, it's very sad, isn't it?
It's very interesting. I think Christopher Pyne's had a long and very successful career. And, you know, certainly in his case, he was sort of in the group within the Liberal Party that wasn't very happy about the move from Turnbull to Morrison. So, to some extent, you know, that's sort of understandable. Chobo's a more interesting case, really, because... you know, I think you'd have sort of less to be unhappy about. And, you know, they're both reasonably young to be leaving the party.
Yeah, I think Christopher Pyne's been there 26 years. He came into the Parliament at 25, which is pretty young. You know, he's had a very interesting career. The fact that his seat is pretty marginal, and in the current environment, I'm not saying he would lose it, but he'd have to fight a pretty hard battle to keep it, despite the French submarines. I think, yeah, Chobo is a more interesting one, but, you know, we've seen Kelly O'Dwyer, we've seen Julie Bishop, you know, and others. You know, it doesn't say, you know, politicians will say otherwise, but it doesn't say, and there are Labor people that are retiring too, you know, but it doesn't say a lot about confidence for people that have worked so long and hard to become ministers, then 3 months out from an election. Confidence, you know.
It's a very bad look.
Yeah, it's not a good look, is it?
And I think there's a strong feeling within the party, and if you speak to people, they'll tell you this sort of privately, that the electorate is in a very angry mood, and that there are going to be consequences for them. I mean, you know, they really do understand that people are frustrated. So, I mean, that certainly is a factor there. I mean, the extent to which it was a factor in any individual person's decision, you know, you never know, and these things are played, you know, by both sides of politics, the political game, you know, rats leaving a sinking ship sort of narrative. But there certainly is, you know, irrefutably a level of fear in the coalition ranks.
Well, we did get Warren Mundine jumping on a sinking ship.
Well, it would be, I mean, it's just such a shame that the coalition doesn't have a lot of younger ministers, or, you know, people that they could say this is, you know, a generational movement and, you know, we're renewing. I mean, that's not a dialogue.
Look, Melissa Price, the Environment Minister, there's a rumour she was actually cited publicly the other day. Is that true, Misha? She was actually at an event?
Look, I haven't heard that rumour.
I mean, it's unsubstantiated. It's unsubstantiated. Yeah. I saw it on Sky, so it's probably not true.
No, they're just saying whatever they want.
So what else, Misha? It's you know, the world doesn't revolve around politics entirely. We saw Donald Trump, you know, having another little love affair with a dictator, but didn't quite work out again this time. They couldn't. They couldn't kiss and keep going? No tonguey?
Well, there were two things I've been interested in this week. The first was I was at a Universities Australia conference in Canberra, at which Tanya Plibersek spoke. And I just was interested as Shadow Education Minister in her language, because the speech was very much framed as when we form government, we will do this, that, and the other thing, rather than the more normal approach, which is,
should we
hear our policies and please vote for us. So I think there's a real sense. I mean, that gave me an interesting glimpse that I think within the Labor side of politics, there really is some detailed planning going on now. There's a lot of sort of crossing fingers, hoping not to make mistakes, but also some planning and thinking about what they're going to do in government, how they're going to tackle issues, which is interesting. The other thing I think for me this week that was huge, and I'm sure you've talked about it a massive amount, but in all of the Pell coverage, I was really interested in the piece that David Marr wrote in The Guardian. Did you talk about that at all?
No, we haven't actually discussed that.
Yeah. But the thing I thought that was really interesting about that was David Marr went through and talked about why Pell is such a hated sort of reviled figure with the public, and really it's sort of his Puritan attitudes towards sex and his, you know, known antipathy towards homosexuality and his sort of really cruel, condescending sort of nastiness. And I thought Pell wrote a terrific piece that was a real tour of all of that, and it ended with an interesting line, which was something about the fact that, you know, we can now know that, you know, George Pell, while he was sort of, you know, the scourge of sex, was also, you know, basically encouraging, you know, choir boys to suck his penis, which is a very graphic thing for somebody to write in a sort of a media and a newspaper type environment. But I think that Marr did it very deliberately, and it was like a little mini scandal because it seemed like that line was removed and then it was back.
Yeah.
But it was a really useful juxtaposition, I think, because it sort of got at the whole issue about why, you know, irrespective of the particular charges, why Pell sort of publicly is such an odious figure, and again, why there is so much sort of anger directed against him. I thought it was a terrific piece of journalism, really.
And don't forget, George Pell once said that homosexuality was more dangerous to your health than smoking.
Well, that's right, and that was in the context of, I think, there'd been a wreath laid at St Patrick Church for people who had, you know, committed suicide from the gay community, and Pell was just dismissive in his sort of withering contempt.
Well,
and I think that's, you know,
he's going to, every day, Misha, currently he has 23 hours in solitary confinement to think about what he's done. But, you know, perhaps he's also thinking about what it's like not to be believed.
Mm.
Think about that, George.
Well, that's right. Yeah. And the other thing is, I mean, thinking about what it's like to be judged, the way in which he judges and condescends to others.
And also, finally, living that vow of poverty.
Yeah.
That's right. So anyway, so I think that's... And the interesting thing about that is also, it again, to me, plays into the political mood at the moment, which is there's a lot of people in power who people feel very angry that they've been mistreated by, and Pell certainly feels part of that club with the, you know, with the letters of, you know, character reference from Abbott and Howard, the support from Greg Craven, the Vice Chancellor of Australian Catholic University. He feels like a club of people who have run things for a long time and made our lives very difficult. And there's a mood in the public that's not acceptable anymore.
Well, I mean, what do we think is going to be the ongoing dialogue between these, you know, his supporters who are very, very high profile? I mean, we're not seeing quite the end of this, and it's just so destructive to, it sort of just devalues the justice system when you have people like John Howard coming out to support George Pell. I mean, everyone, of course, is entitled to their opinions, but, I mean, what do you think that's going to lead to?
Yeah, but hang on, how do you write a character reference for someone and acknowledge they've just been, their conviction has been made public for clerical child sexual abuse, and you acknowledge that in your character reference and say it hasn't changed my view of him? That says more about John Howard than anything else he's ever said.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, compelling. I mean, having said that, in defence of Howard and Abbott, I mean, I think if you know somebody for a long period of time and they commit a crime and they're found guilty, putting that to one side, if they say to you, write a character reference, no matter what the crime, you can, and as part of aiding the court, maybe even should, write something about what you know of that person. The thing with the Howard character reference was it was incredibly revealing. I think, as you're saying, he sort of said, he's been found guilty of this crime. That doesn't alter my opinion even one little bit. And then he goes on to say pretty much because he's a lively conversationalist, and you're just like, what? Like, well, how do those two come to jail?
I believe Joseph Goebbels was a good dinner guest. You know, like, you know, let's... Look, you know, we don't... You know, I spoke about this earlier, Misha, after, you know, in an editorial, but, you know, we're not... We don't want to turn... I don't want to turn this show into Crime Watch, you know, for, you know, talking about criminals, because that's what George Pell is.
Mm.
But the fact that an ex-Prime Minister, a position of huge... authority in
two ex-prime ministers,
but you know what John Howard wrote, right? He's not senile. He knew what he was signing. He would have written it, right? That line, that yes, I'm aware of his conviction, but basically, and I'm paraphrasing, it does not change my view of him. And I understand, yes, if you've been friends with someone for a very long time, and I have experience of this, of people that are friends of mine that have had all sorts of unfortunate occurrences in their life. And they remain friends, but I don't talk about it publicly. I say to them privately, yes, I'm appalled at what you did, but I still have some regard for you. That's different to writing a character reference, and I'm not an ex-Prime Minister, right? There's a big difference. And the message that that sends to survivors of child sexual abuse, every single one of them got a kick in the guts from Robert Richter and others, and those people should hang their head in shame.
It's only worsening their legacy. It's not bringing Pell up, it's bringing them down.
Yeah, it's dragging themselves down to his level.
Yeah, look, I think that's true. And it also creates a sense that, again, there's this idea of some sort of like club of friends that are running things, and no matter what they do, like nothing will change. Like there's nothing that will actually... make somebody say, well, you know, I deplore your conduct. You know, there is sort of no consequence. It's consequenceless. You know, that was, I mean, I think everybody found reading that Howard reference a pretty disappointing experience. Not because he gave a character reference. I think he was entitled to.
Of course he is.
But I think just the way it was worded and what he said and saying that, you know, basically the fact that he was convicted was of no consequence to him was...
You know, for a man who has professed so much respect for the law and the justice system and our system of government and our judiciary, John, you should be ashamed of yourself, because you're saying, I don't accept the verdict, basically. I don't believe it, right? You know.
And it's very interesting to see, you know, I mean, Greg Craven wrote a piece in The Australian...
It was a Craven piece.
It was.
In more ways than one.
I mean, I've got to say, I thought it was absolutely sort of a, you know, an apology on Pell's behalf, and it was, I mean, you know, sort of unsustainable, and obviously there's been both, there's been others, there's been a lot of people sort of coming out who normally would say, respect the criminal justice system, you know, its consequences need to be respected. Neil coming out and saying, no, we don't believe it. And it's just, I mean, again, it's a real inconsistency, these people who place absolute faith in these institutions when it suits them, and then when it doesn't suit them,
it's called hypocrisy.
Yes.
And, but well, then again, you know, what do you expect from News Corps?
Well, that's right. And then again, I mean, look, there is a... I mean, I also read a really interesting piece by Guy Rundle in Crikey, where basically he was saying... And I think this is really important to bear in mind. The criminal justice system isn't, although a jury is a fact-finding body from the point of view of law, the criminal justice system isn't the arbiter of truth in the public. So we get to have a discussion, and we should have a discussion about whether we think something in particular is true or not. And I think it's legitimate for people, if they want to have a discussion about whether a conviction is unfair or false or whatever. But the difficulties of the way in which these have been predetermined sort of advocacy that has no open mind to what happened in court, the actual facts. I mean, you can see that sort of arguments being put forward is so incredibly prejudiced. They just have no credibility.
Yeah. Interesting point of law. You can, you know, whether you can... How you can criticise a judgment and it may not be regarded as contempt of court. someone said to me the other day, why isn't what Andrew Bolt's saying subject to contempt of court? And I said, quite simply, he's below contempt.
Oh.
Well done. I mean, the actual fact is that, I mean, the reason that you can say what you want now is because none of it's sub judice, because the jury's made a decision. And the appeal court, which will make a subsequent decision, is made up of judges. And it's perceived that judges are above being influenced by the public.
Of course they are.
So, you know, I don't know whether that's true or not, but that's sort of where we are. Yeah.
Unfortunately, Misha, we've run out of time. Look forward to having you in the studio again real soon, and encourage listeners, if you don't read The Conversation, then you should.
You should.
You must.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.